All right, let there be light. Might not be able to levitate, but I've got other special powers. Thank you, person in the back, for helping me with my special powers. Okay. We're over halfway through the retreat already. Time flies when you're having fun, right? Or time goes really slow when you suffer, maybe. But does it? Does time fly when you're having fun? When I was a student in my first year of university, I still lived with my parents. And every day had to travel by train from my parents' town to university town in Delft. Delft is a city in the Netherlands. I studied engineering there. Every day I went by train. And sometimes I used to play with my perceptions looking out of the window of the train. At that time, it wasn't still before the time that everybody had mobile phones to distract them. So people were just sitting in the train, reading a book or listening to music or watching the scenery from the window. And what I sometimes used to do is trying to change my perception so that it felt like the train was standing still and the world was moving outside of the train. I don't know if you've ever done that, but it feels really interesting. It's like the world just passes by outside and you are sitting there in the same place. And that is what life can be like if we find peace in our minds. It feels like time doesn't really go fast or slow. It's just like we are always in the same moment and life just happens before us. And then it can be really peaceful because it takes away so much of the stress of having that feeling that you need to do something or that you need to go somewhere. Because you just trust that life comes to you and things just happen when time is right. This morning I was meditating in my room and I was a little bit restless. So I thought, okay, I've taught you some of those reflections to get rid of restlessness, like to reflect upon the downside of thinking. So I tried to do that. And then I realized, oh, I'm too sleepy to do that effectively. So I had both sleepiness and restlessness. And then I thought, okay, it's one of those days. But I've been there before, so I realized, okay, I'm too restless to be peaceful, and I'm too sleepy to do any of those reflections. What do? I'm just going to sit here and do nothing. And just watch the thoughts go by, as if I'm looking out of the window of the train and see the landscape roll by. I'm not judging anything. I'm not having that feeling that I am the thinker or that I am doing something. No, I'm just sitting there and watching and seeing things happen without any negativity towards the thoughts. They're just there. Okay, maybe I didn't have a very good night's sleep. I was still a bit sleepy, maybe because of the heat or something. Okay, it happens from time to time. Or maybe very often, that can be the case. Doesn't matter, I just sit there. Not doing anything, just letting things happen. And of course, if you have that attitude, you're sitting there doing nothing, your mind gets an opportunity to rest. And you're in the present moment, even though you're thinking. You're watching the thinking from the perspective of the present moment. And of course, soon my mind started to settle and became more calm. It's because I was not, as it were, throwing fuel on the fire. I wasn't making the mind more restless by trying to push away those thoughts or anything like that. Just being there, happy to be there, and being kind to the mind, having this attitude of acceptance. Like, okay, it's just early morning and stuff, I'm sleepy, I'm restless, cool, I'm all right with that. It's just my mind, I'm happy with my mind. So that is such an important attitude to have. I spoke this morning a little bit with Venerable Ananda. You're on a silent retreat, but we sometimes say a few words to one another. And he said, meditation, said a very wise thing. He said, meditation is so easy once you have that attitude of kindness. And that's exactly right, because once you have that attitude of kindness, then whatever the mind or body or the world gives you or brings to you, you're there to just accept it as it is. And then it's so easy to stay in the present moment. It's like kindness and present moment awareness, they cannot be separated from one another in my experience. I always have to have that attitude of acceptance and kindness. So I thought today I will speak about that, because I already spoke about the hindrances of sleepiness and restlessness quite a bit. There's much more that can be said, of course, but today speak about the hindrance of ill will. There's five hindrances the Buddha talked about. Well, these are just general categories for all sorts of obstacles that can happen in meditation. The Buddha just chose to categorize it as five things, but you could categorize it differently. But let's use that system of the Buddha. And he said, the hindrances are restlessness and sleepiness that I mentioned already, ill will, which I'll talk about in a moment, and then there is sensual desire and doubt. So who knows, maybe I'll speak about sensual desire later. And doubt is usually not the biggest hindrance for most people, but most of the doubts you can usually alleviate by asking questions from people who might know a bit more, or reading like the Buddhist texts, or often also very useful if you're doubting your mind and you're just wondering about something, having this question about something, just stop that question, you know. Just stop the doubt. Stop wondering about, am I doing it right or am I doing it wrong? Was the Buddha actually enlightened or not? Blah, blah, blah. All those questions. Yeah, I don't know. You might have that doubt. So all those questions, you just drop them. So doubt, usually for most people, not a big problem. So I won't give that much more time. But ill will, one of the biggest problems. And ill will, as I said, you can't really stay in the present moment when there's ill will. Because if there's ill will, you're not content, you're not happy to be there, and your mind will always try and look for something else. Now, ill will we can have to so many things in life. We can have ill will to other people, we can have ill will towards just life in general. Those things I already talked a little bit about, especially with the story of the crocodile yesterday. Remember that? You remember that as well, Gusto? Yes, he got bit by a crocodile, but survived. Survivor! I like that he has a name now. Okay, and what was I saying? So I talked a little bit about ill will towards external things already, but what is much more detrimental to meditation is when we have ill will towards our body and mind. So I already tried to address that somehow in the talks, especially ill will to the body. But ill will towards the mind, that is another very big thing. But that blocks people in meditation, and that makes them suffer unnecessarily, actually. Like if this morning, if I would have had the attitude of, ah, stupid mind, why are you sleepy? You just had a long night rest. Why are you thinking so much? You should know better. You're teaching all these people how to stop thinking. Why can't you do it yourself? if I had that attitude, then I would have ill will. But I realized, ill will. I've had enough of that in my life. I'm not going to go there anymore. So I'm just going to be kind to my mind and know that I am not perfect. And I'm sorry to say, none of you is perfect either. bummer. But that's just human life, you know. We are not perfect. Your mind is not perfect. So why be upset with that? Yeah, it just shows you you're human. So you can have this kind attitude towards your mind, and especially in meditation, because that is the whole purpose of meditation, is to find this kindness and gentleness and peace. All these words, they're different words, but they all come together in one emotion, as it were, in the mind, where you can just be happy and content because you don't have any ill will, any desire. Now, some of you might have wondered, why are there these stuffed animals all over the place? Like there's Gusto, and there's Gusto's many friends over there, and there's more friends over there. And when I first saw them, I also wondered, why is all these animals there? And some of the people, as I said, already took some. And it's because Ajahn Brahm once introduced the bear-hugging meditation. And the thing with stuffed animals is, unlike people, they are perfect. Because they don't hurt you, and they will always be soft and cuddly for you. They don't have any negative attitudes towards you. And some people really resonate with that. Some of you might not, but some people really find stuffed animals really cool. And then if they sit with a stuffed animal, it just gives them a sense of kindness and peace, because that animal will never hurt them. And that, just that idea, they realize, why would I hurt myself? And they can find some kindness in that. Now, when I first saw all the animals, I think I said before, I don't like bears. And at the start, there were only bears. So I thought, what a kind of silly meditation has Ajahn Brahm come up with this time. And I thought it was really childish. But many people had those bears, so I thought, okay, yeah, it must be beneficial to those people. And if you think it might be beneficial, please take one. But I never really understood until my mother made me my own personal, private, stuffed... I call him Sunyako, which means little Sunyo. And look, he has even food in his bowl. Like curry with a spoon. It's so nice. And then I understood, because I have this sitting on the shelf in my heart. And every time I look at it, I feel so kind. That kindness emanating from it. Of course, also because my mother made it for me, so every time I'm reminded of the kindness of my mother. And sometimes I just grab Sunyako and I go, yeah, we are here together, mate. And sometimes even sleep with Sunyako. When he go to bed, he has to take his glasses off, of course. And I put them on my nightstand and take the bowl off as well. Yeah. Otherwise, you might break your glasses, Sunyako. So maybe I should put my glasses on as well, actually, so we look more alike. And then I can actually see you as well. Now, my mother must have thought that with one sunyako, I would still be lonely. So for my birthday last December, is a whole bag of little sunyakos. Sunyakokos, maybe. Little sunyos. And I thought I would share them with you. That's actually why my mother made them, to share with people. So I will put them later in the where the desk is for the retreat managers. And I don't think we have enough for everybody, but if you feel you can benefit from a little sunyako, don't be hesitant to take one home with you. Or you can also think of them maybe by the shape of it. It's more like a little Ajahn Brahm. I'm sure he won't mind. He makes jokes about him being fat all the time. One time I said to Ajahn Brahm, if people call you fat, just remember you're bigger than that. He didn't laugh. Anyway, so better get on with the talk, otherwise I can't say anything useful, only stupid jokes. So these stuffed animals are there for a reason. They're to help us with kindness. And kindness, gentleness, acceptance, again, all words pointing at the same thing. I like acceptance, that idea of just accepting whatever happens. That idea here is so, so valuable. If I would have the choice to take only one thing from Buddhism, it would be that acceptance of whatever happens in both my body and mind. I already told you a little bit before about when your body is in pain. If you learn to accept it, you can even make it feel pleasant sometimes. Crazy, but it's possible. Sometimes your body is sick, and you get really upset with being sick. Ah, there's something wrong with my body. It's sick, has this flu, cancer, anything in between, whatever sickness, and you get upset with your body. But why? It's very natural for the body to be sick. And some of you might know the story that Ajahn Brahm sometimes tells. Next time you go to the doctor, don't say, "Doctor, there's something wrong with me, I'm sick." And say, "Doctor, there's something right with me, I'm sick. I'm sick again. Yay." Now, well, you don't have to go yay, but just show it's natural to be sick. And you all know that. It's natural to be sick, right? It's just having a body. There's only so much you can do to keep it healthy from time to time. You get sick. Also, the monks and the nuns, they get sick. From time to time, and it's just the nature of having a body. But you will understand that. But when it comes to the mind, often when it has its sicknesses, we don't realize that it's very natural for the mind also to have its quote-unquote sicknesses, for it to be restless or depressed or anxious or upset, or all those things. And we think we should be better than that. Yeah? We are the meditators. We shouldn't be depressed. We shouldn't be anxious. And that attitude of it shouldn't be that way, that is actually a large part of that is ill will. You're not accepting the way you are. And if we have that attitude towards those things, then usually it just makes it worse. I don't know exactly why that is, but for some reason, if you try to push things away, they often just get stronger. Do some of you recognize that as well? There is this story of the demon in the king's palace. Yeah? So, I should tell it now. Not just say you that there is a story and then don't say anything. There was once a king. I'll try and tell it quickly because I've got many more things to say. There was a king living in India a long time ago, at the time that there were also a very vegan crocodile living nearby. Same time. And that king was a very kind and wise king, and he always took good care of his people. One day the king went to the neighboring country to negotiate peace with that country because they were at war, and the king was a kind king. He wanted to find peace with that country. And when the king was away, there was this little but ugly small demon that walked into the palace. And when he walked into the palace, the guards tried to stop him. You cannot enter the palace. This is the king's palace. You don't belong here. Get out of here, stupid demon. But the demon just kept walking and walking because he was much stronger than those guards. And what he did, he walked into the king's throne room and sat down right on the king's throne. Boom. And the guards and all the people in the castle were like, "You shouldn't sit on the king's throne. That's only for the king. Get out, you stupid demon." And they tried to hit him with their swords. But what happened? With every ugly word and every punch and kick, the demon grew bigger and grew more ugly. And its horns got spikier and its teeth bigger. And he even became more stinky as well. And the demon just kept growing and growing with each angry word until at some point he was so big he filled up the entire room and his head was hitting the ceiling. Luckily though, the king got back and the king got off his horse and entered the throne room and he saw right away what was happening. So he walked up to the demon and said, "Welcome to my palace. I hope you have a good time here. Please enjoy the comforts of my throne. It has nice cushions. Can I get you maybe a glass of chai tea? And would you like some grapes as well? Or maybe a foot massage? Or is there anything I can do for you? It's so lovely for you to come and visit us." And with every kind word, you guess what happened? The demon started shrinking and started getting smaller and smaller. And soon again, he was back at his original size. But the king didn't stop there. The king went on and said, "Oh, you're such a beautiful being. Thank you again for visiting us." And the demon shrank further and further and further, until it was only this big, that the king went on and on and on. And then, poof, the demon disappeared. And the demon is a metaphor for those things in your mind that you don't want to be there. Those depressions, anxieties, upsets, and that you want to get rid of. Get out of here. You don't belong here. You shouldn't be here. You stupid XYZ. And when you do that, it grows bigger and bigger. But if instead you're kind to it and accepting, "Okay, welcome to my mind. You are part of me, part of life. I'm happy that you come visit." Then it goes smaller and smaller and smaller, until maybe, poof, it just disappears. This is a very wise story. I believe it's from the Jataka tales, actually, is it? I don't know, I think so. And that is such a great attitude to have towards things happening in our mind. And I spoke to a couple of people about anxiety, and I wanted to focus on that a little bit more, anxiety, because it can be such an obstacle for people, not just in meditation, but in life. So how do we learn how to accept anxiety? It's all nice to hear this story about a demon in a palace, but we've heard that many times before, and we're still unable to accept this anxiety. So it's been a long time since I have been anxious, at least in any significant way. But I remembered when I was anxious, and I decided to, this morning, write a little list of why should I accept anxiety if it happens again. So why should you accept your anxiety? I thought, you're anxious or depressed could be, that kind of thing. You always look at the negative side of it. You think like, it shouldn't be here. It's only bad. Anxiety is bad. What is it? I thought, maybe there's some good things, some beautiful things behind anxiety. So I made a list. And maybe you can do this for yourself as well at some point. What is good and great about my anxiety or whatever you have that you is your angry demon? I'd like to protect myself from things happening. Like your anxiety about the future, and you don't want bad things for you to happen, so anxiety is a way to protect myself, or at least a wish to protect myself. Is that a good thing or a bad thing, wanting to protect yourself? It's a good thing. Good thing. That means I care for myself, actually. I want to protect myself from whatever I envision might happen in the future. So it means I care for myself, but is behind that anxiety. It's a good thing or a bad thing? It's a good thing. It also shows some realism, because I realize the future is unpredictable. Yeah, if I knew exactly what was going to happen, I wouldn't be anxious. But I realize, the future might turn out in ways that I don't know. Okay, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, that's a good thing. It's insight. Okay, great. And let's say you're anxious about doing a certain job. Many people have public speaking anxiety, for example. What does it show if you're anxious about that sort of stuff? Means I want to be prepared and do a good job for people. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Very good thing. You want to help people and want to be prepared. There's nothing bad in it. And also, sometimes you're anxious about what people think of you. And that you might think, it's bad that I'm anxious about it, but it also shows that you just want to fit in and be accepted by other people. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's a good thing. You don't want to stand out, be the crazy person, you just want to fit in, right? And what else? It just shows you you're a human with emotions. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Yeah, good thing. It's just like everybody else. So, I want to protect myself, care for myself, I'm realistic, I want to be prepared, do a good job, want to fit in, and I just want to be a human with emotions. I don't want to get rid of that anxiety anymore. It's very good, very beneficial. Yeah, just convince myself, let's just keep it, actually. If I get rid of that anxiety, maybe I also get rid of trying to protect myself and caring for myself. And I don't want to get rid of all of that. And that is how you can actually learn to accept these kind of things. Not just by forcing acceptance on it, but actually learning what is beneficial about it. What are some good and beautiful qualities about that anxiety or whatever? What does it show about you that's beautiful and great? It might also have like depression, and then you can apply the same things. Many people get depressed because they feel a lack of self-worth, like they are not achieving things in life. Well, what does that show? It shows you still want to have some aims. You have some certain standards that you want to live up to. That's a great thing. Yeah. And also, people get depressed, they think they're not accepted by others. Again, it shows you just want to be loved by others. And all these things, you can apply to that as well. There's nothing bad about these kind of what we call mental illnesses. No, it's not illnesses. It shows there's actually some very much beauty behind that. And when you reflect like that, it becomes so much more easy to live life and also to meditate. It's also in meditation when you might not have like anxiety syndrome or anything, but you still have this this nagging feeling of little bit of anxiousness inside yourself. Even the Buddha said that before his enlightenment he got fear and anxiety in his meditation sometimes. And again, it just shows you want to protect yourself from something that you don't know what it is. I talked about the scary forest before, you know, with the omelet. To not go in too deep because you want to protect yourself. So it's actually a good thing. And I hope that makes some sense to you. And maybe you might make a list like that for yourself or whatever you're struggling with. What is good about it? Yeah. Then you can learn to accept it much more deeply. And then you might even not want to get rid of it anymore. Maybe you want to lessen it a bit, but don't get rid of it completely. And the paradoxical thing is, once you're willing to completely accept something, it's like that demon in the king's palace. It just disappears. Often. It's so funny, but that's just the way it is. And I told you before, realize you're all human beings and you're all not perfect. And that is great to not be perfect. And there's a little story about anxiety specifically that I would like to share just because some people came to me and asked about it. It's a story from Eastern Europe. And there is a girl who is about to get married. And she and her partner just bought a new house to live in. So the girl was checking out this new house. And she went through the rooms and she came down to the cellar. She saw a barrel, and on top of a barrel was a big stone that the people use to crush their food, to make like pickled onions or something. I don't know exactly what they make in Eastern Europe, but there was a big stone on the barrel, and suddenly she started crying. And her mother, who was with her, heard her crying and went down into the cellar and said, "What's the matter?" And the girl said, "Oh, when I get married and we'll have kids, then one day my baby will walk into the room and into the cellar and we'll hit the barrel and the stone will fall on him and he'll die." And the mother was convinced by the story. Yeah, and she started crying as well. "Oh no, my grandchild will get crushed by the stone." And then her father was also along, heard it as well, and he came into the cellar and he saw the two women crying and was like, "What is the matter?" And they told the story about the stone falling on the child. And the father, he started crying as well. "My grandchild, what are you doing? What is going to happen? He's going to die. Oh no." And then the husband-to-be entered the cellar and he saw his future bride there crying and asked about it, and she said, "We'll have a child and it will go into the cellar and get crushed by the stone." And the husband was like, "I don't want to marry anybody like that. I want to marry the least crazy person in the whole of Eastern Europe, not the craziest person." So he left. And he went to travel about. But soon he came back to his bride because he realized that everybody is crazy. And they got married. And you know what? The baby never got crushed by any stone whatsoever. And that is a beautiful story because it just makes us realize everybody has that craziness. Yeah? And for some reason we think we have to be that perfect person or we have to marry the perfect person. But you'll never find the perfect person. You'll never be the perfect person. You'll make mistakes and your mind will be crazy from time to time. Yeah, especially that story shows you something about anxiety as well. It's okay to have it. Yeah. But of course it also shows you something about anxiety that often is not realistic. The story is a little bit of an exaggeration, of course. You know it's not going to happen that the baby's going to go into the cellar and get crushed by a stone. But when we are anxious about the future, we often make it much more real than it actually is. It feels like, ah, oh, this thing is definitely going to happen. And it's going to be extremely bad. That's what it feels like when you're anxious, isn't it? You're always expecting the worst. You're never expecting something good to happen because then you wouldn't be anxious. You'd be excited or something instead. Always expecting the worst. Is that really realistic? No. Why do we always expect the worst? And why are we so quick to judge? If you think like that, that also takes away some of the power of that anxiety because you realize, okay, it might show some good things about me, but it's also a bit too much because it's not realistic. And it's also often what they call all or nothing thinking. It's going to be all bad and nothing good is going to happen. And to illustrate that, me and Sunyako have another story. Actually, it's just only me who has the story, but I just want to hold Sunyako again. All right. One final story. A long time ago in India. All these stories, I don't know. They could have happened in Australia as well, actually. But let's say a long time ago in India, there was a wise nun living in a village. Often these stories about wise monks or something, or wise old men in the village, but switch it around a bit. Wise nun living in a village. And in this village, there was also a farmer. The farmer worked very hard, of course, like all farmers do. And the farmer, he had a cow. The cow gave him some milk to drink, and the cow helped him to plow the field. And the farmer very happy with his cow. But one day, the cow escaped. The cow had enough of giving milk and had enough of plowing the field. So the cow left. And the farmer went up to the nun and said, ah, the worst thing has happened to me. My cow has left. Now I can't plow my fields anymore and I don't have any milk anymore. It's the worst thing that could ever happen. And the nun, she said, maybe, maybe not. The farmer went home. And when he went home, he decided that day to go look for his cow. Look around in the forest and fields if he could find his cow anywhere. But he couldn't find it. But instead, he found an abandoned horse. Wow! And he took the horse. And a horse is much better than a cow. Can plow many more fields. Might not give milk, but you can ride it. And it's much more valuable than a cow as well. So the farmer really happy. And he went to the nun to tell her. He said, wow, I found this horse just abandoned in the field. And I just took it. And now I've got a horse. It's the best thing that ever happened to me. And the nun, she said, maybe, maybe not. The farmer thought the nun was just silly. And he went, because it's obviously the best thing to ever happen for a farmer, to find a free horse. How could the nun say, maybe, maybe not? She's crazy, he thought. When he went home, and the horse, he showed it to his son and said, wow, this horse, maybe you should ride it. because it still needs some taming. And the son went on the horse's back, and they ride a bit. But then the horse, it jumped, and the son fell off the horse, bam, on the floor. And the son snapped his arm. It broke his arm. Oh, no, the farmer thought, I got to tell the nun about this, because the son always used to help him in his work in the farm. And now he had no help anymore, had to do it all by himself. So he went to the nun and said, oh, you know this horse, this stupid horse, and my son sat on his back and he broke his arm falling off. It's the worst thing that could have ever happened to me. And the nun was, maybe, maybe not. And the farmer still was like, this crazy nun, she doesn't know. It's only, how can she say, it's, maybe it's not bad that my son broke his arm. Of course it's bad, there's nothing maybe cute about that. The farmer went home. Next day, the army came to recruit people to fight in the war. And this farmer was luckily too old, but his son was of right age to be recruited by the army. And if he would ever been recruited, he would be away for a long time, maybe even die. But he had a broken arm, so he couldn't fight in the army. So they left him, and he didn't need to go in the army. And the farmer went up to the nun and said, ah, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. My son broke his arm and now he can stay with me. Wow! And the nun said, maybe, maybe not. And I never knew if the farmer learned his lesson from that nun. But I hope you learned the lesson that why are we so quick to judge things as good or bad? Not just in life, but in meditation, especially in context of this retreat. Why are we always judging this meditation is good, this meditation is bad? How do you know? You don't know what the future will bring, what you might learn from this, or what might happen to you as a result of this. So don't judge like that. Don't judge good or bad. And if we don't judge good or bad, we are peaceful. Because especially bad judgment, they're often just ill will. And if we can be peaceful in this moment, we don't have ill will, we don't judge things as bad. And life is often so unpredictable. As I said, it's realistic to know life is unpredictable. Well, we think it's predictable. We jump to conclusions all the time. And as a final story, before I do a short guided meditation, I'll do another one in the afternoon, more detailed. Final story to show you that point, that life is unpredictable, but we jump to conclusions, is because I was reminded by Slavik being here, he's from Poland. And I told this story in Poland as well once in a university. It was, I think, the first talk I did there. And I told this story, and actually I was a translator as well, and he translated everything into Polish. So by the end of the story, I was able to say, może nie, może tak, which means maybe not, maybe yes. So I paid really close attention to what the translator was saying, so that when I came to the story about the army, I didn't say it in English, I said it in Polish, and I found it really funny. But that's not the story I was trying to tell. But when I told this story, it was already like 9 o'clock at night in a city in the middle of Poland. Poland is pretty big, and I told this story. And after the story and after the talk, I walked out, and I saw outside in the hall, somewhere in a corner, this girl sitting. And I saw she had all tears on her face. She was talking to somebody else, but I saw, oh, she came from my talk. So I went up to her and asked what was going on. Was the talk that bad? No, I didn't ask that. I just asked what is going on. And she said she had traveled for like 300 or 400 kilometers just to come to that talk. Wow, that's crazy. But, well, not crazy, that's actually cool, but you know what I mean. Not crazy crazy, but crazy cool crazy. But she said, okay, because it was so late at night, I booked a room in a hostel to stay. And I was told it was a private room. But just before the talk, when I went to drop off my luggage there, I was told that I had to share a room with 20 guys who were all drunk. And I don't want to go to that hostel. So now I don't have a place to sleep. It's the worst thing that could happen to me. No, she didn't say that. But that was clearly her attitude. That is the worst thing that can happen to me. And what happened is I was with my attendant and he said, I'll offer you a room in a hotel where I'm staying. Separate rooms. You'll stay in one room, I'll stay in the other, and I'll pay for it. So we took the lady in the car with us, took her to the hotel, and by talking to my attendant, she also got into the retreat that I was teaching later that trip. And it was quite hard to get into because so many people wanted to come. So in the end, it was a good thing that she was booked into that room. It all turned out for the better. So this is not just stories of ancient farmers in India. It happens to this day. And to bring it back to meditation, because that's, I talk a lot about life in general, but life in general has an effect on our meditation. In meditation, we are always thinking about life often. That causes the restlessness. So to bring it back to meditation, don't have ill will towards your mind. And don't jump to conclusions that this is bad, what you're experiencing. Because who knows, you might learn something. And it's also, especially things like anxiety, depression, trauma, that's also shows a lot of beauty about you and a lot of good things. So I talked a little bit longer than I intended to, but let's do a little meditation. If you just want to stand up and stretch a bit before we do, then please do so. And we'll do like a meditation for 15 minutes or so. Focusing on kindness. In this like 15 minutes meditation, just give you a little taste of meditating with kindness. We can still meditate much the same as we did before. Relaxing the body, finding good posture, focusing on the breath, but pay special attention to the attitude with which you do those things. Now start by finding a good posture to meditate in. Do so out of kindness to your body. Your body is not perfect, just like anybody else's, but it's good enough. It's done a pretty okay job so far, since we're still here, able to hear these teachings, able to sit here. So we can be kind to the body, be thankful for it being here. He can even be kind to any kind of discomfort or even pain in the body. Pain is a signal from the body that something might be awry, something might be wrong. So this is a way for the body to tell you that something is going on. So it's also, in a sense, the body taking care of itself and trying to take care of you. You can say, thank you for that message, that painful feeling. Because now I know that there might be something going on there. And there might be some healing needed there, or maybe just relaxation. You'll find that once you give your body that message back, you say like, okay, thank you, I got your message that something is wrong there. That already takes away a lot of the pain, or at least influence of that pain upon your mind. This way we learn to accept even uncomfortable feelings. And we don't judge them as being worse than pleasant feeling. Don't judge something as good or bad. We just learn to accept this body and the feelings within it as part of nature. And because we care for our body, naturally the intention will arise to relax it. So please, be kind to your body and see if it will relax just a tiny bit more than before. Again, not looking for perfection. Just something we can work with, something that's okay. And since this is a brief meditation, we can only relax the body so far or to such an extent, I mean. But just do what's reasonable. Then we apply the same kind attitude to the mind as well. Often we feel like we are the mind. But see if you can take a step back and contemplate the mind as something outside of you, in a sense, just like that you can often do with the body. And see that the mind is also just a part of nature. It's not different from the body in that sense. Whatever the mind does, it's always deep beneath it. It is just looking for happiness. Even depression, anxiety, fears, restlessness, desire, anger, all of these is actually the mind looking for some sort of happiness, some sort of protection or safety. I once heard a Tibetan monk say, beneath all emotions is compassion. And this is what he meant. So when we realize that even beneath the hindrances of the mind, there is some beauty, then we can learn to embrace even and accept those hindrances. You can tell yourself, this mind of mine is good enough for me. My mind is actually pretty cool. Might not always do what I want, but it's always deep inside coming from a good place. It's just like the crocodile hurting the other animals because it wanted to get rid of its toothache, be distracted from it. Likewise, a restless mind often just wants to move on to something else, to find some happiness there. That's okay. We can open our hearts to that. we can accept the body and the mind both. Not by acceptance, I don't mean not just grudgingly accept it because you have to. No, I mean really embracing it, inviting it in, making friends with our body and mind. Yeah, this body and mind are cool. I don't need a other body of mine. I'm satisfied with this. Who knows, other people might get really deep meditations. Other people might get enlightened. But whatever, I am already happy. So I don't need those things. Allowing the body and mind to be, and also the world outside. If we allow it all to be, then we arrive in this moment. Because there's no need to go anywhere else. The world outside. Maybe it's too hot for you or too cold. People are fidgeting or making noises. This is good enough though. These are really cool people. Happy to be here with all these other people. Just like me, they are not perfect. And I allow them all to be here. And if you are able to have that attitude of contentment, just being here, not needing anything, then you'll realize you also don't need to do anything in your meditation. You don't need to do insight meditation or whatever sort of meditation, contemplation or anything. You're just here and you're happy. And I might go a little bit too quick now for some people. So just, if this is the case for you, just stay here in the present moment and finding peace with your body and mind. But if you've already found that some of that peace, you might recognize that what comes into your awareness might be your breathing. Because there's not much going on and we are content to be here. The most active thing that's going on in the body and mind happens to be the breath. So that's why that comes into our awareness. And when it does, we accept it as well. Embrace it. Be kind to it. Maybe you have a tense breath or a pain in your airways or whatever. But this breath is good enough. It's all we've got right now anyway. And it does its job. Even if you have the worst breath ever, you're still able to listen to this meditation and practice along, so that's good enough. Once we have this kind attitude to our body, mind, and breath, so easy to stay here. Okay, I will see you this afternoon. And there was one person I was going to have an interview with at 1 o'clock, if we can do it actually right now after the talk, that might be better.